Thank you. James Bazzello joined? The recordings have started, madam.
All right. Thank you. Okay, good morning, everyone. This is Mike Rodenbaugh. I'm on the GNSO Council. I also participate in the business constituency. Sharing this call of the Interregistrar Transfer Policy Working Group. We've got three questions in our charter. But the first thing we ought to do is take a roll of who's here and then talk about the chair of the working group. Mike, could you do a roll?
Yes, certainly, Mike. We have Barbara Steele from the Registry Constituency, yourself, Mike Rodenbaugh, Business Constituency, Paul Diaz, Registrar, Stephen Vine, Registrar, Kevin Ertman, IPC, Adam Eisner, Registrar, am I right?
Yep.
And James Bladel, Registrar.
Thanks.
And for staff, we have Olaf Nordling, Marika Konix, and Rob Hogarth, and myself.
Thanks a lot. Okay, so I put out a note early last week for expressions of interest for being the chair, and naturally did not have any responses. So I'm begging, because I really should not be the chair of this group as the council liaison. I know we've got a bunch of different registrar representatives participating, wondering if anybody from that group might want to chair, or Barbara or Kevin are the only other two at the moment outside of the registrar constituency. I can say that, you know, we've got a lot of great staff support on this, and obviously we'll be relying on staff as always to do most of the heavy lifting with the report drafting and organization. So hopefully the chair will be just really running the meetings and making calls as to consensus, which can always be challenged by other members of the group. So with that, I will hope that somebody might volunteer to be the chair. How long shall we sit here in silence until somebody volunteers to be the chair?
Well, if it's only running the meetings, I'd be, this is Kevin, I would be happy to run the meetings and try to figure out what the consensus is.
Okay. Well, I would really appreciate that, Kevin. Does anybody else have any interest in being the chair or have any questions or for Kevin? Kevin, maybe just for my benefit, and I'm sure others, could you just give us a little bit of your background? We know that you're with the intellectual property constituents.
Yeah, well, as you may surmise, I'm a lawyer with a general practice law firm, a member of the intellectual property group at that law firm. It's Baker & Daniels. We're headquartered in Indianapolis, Indiana, in the U.S. We represent a number of large clients that have significant domain name holdings that have some concerns in this area. Also involved in representing a couple of domainers who are mass users of the domain name registration system. And so I know the domain name business from both of those perspectives.
Good to meet. Does anybody else have any questions for Kevin? I think, Kevin, by consensus, then you will be the chair of the working group. And I'll work with you and the staff, you know, just to get things running here. Next things we ought to do today, I think, are discuss, you know, I'm assuming that this meeting time is okay for everybody on this call. We're planning to have it at this time for at least another few weeks, at which point we'll be able to have slightly longer calls. We'll be able to have slightly longer calls if we need them after 2 or 3 weeks. But let's see, the other thing that I should note is everybody's going to need to supply, can we tell who that is, or operator, can you tell who that is, Houston? Anybody hear me?
Just barely.
Okay. Yeah. You turn that, get that music turned off. Operator?
Oh.
Glenn, is there anything you can do?
Busy trying to get hold of the operator. Thanks, Mike.
All right.
Okay, sorry about that. I found out it was on Mr. Vine's line that was creating the music. I think he might have pressed the mute button on his phone.
Yeah.
If you can use the star 6 button instead, that would be great. Otherwise, it creates music into the room.
Steven, are you trying to put us on hold or what? Come on. Okay, so I was saying that everyone in the group is going to need to provide a statement of interest for this working group. Unless they've already provided one in an ongoing working group or myself on the council. So we should try to get those done, please, within the next week before our next call. And I suppose it wouldn't hurt to just get a... We do have, I think, 6 or 7 of us on a call today. Get a feel for what we'll be talking about next week. And I'm not sure if people on the call want to start diving in today. Just sort of taking preliminary thoughts on the three questions that are before us. But it seems to me that the questions are pretty straightforward. Maybe we should just start with that issue, though, and see if anybody on the call has any questions or issues of clarification with the three questions that we're tasked to look at. Right, I'm assuming everyone's familiar with the charter and with those questions, but they're clear enough then.
Excuse me, Mike?
Yep.
Mike, it's Paul Diaz on the line. Look, I'm sorry, I've been having some technical difficulties and have missed like the last couple minutes, and I didn't want to dial back in, but it just came back. Did we already take volunteers for chair?
We did, actually.
Okay.
Were you, I'm not sure.
I'm sorry, I wanted to volunteer as well. And that was my point. I was about to dial back in, and then it suddenly came back on.
Okay, Paul. So, Paul, you're with Network Solutions, right?
Right, that's correct.
Okay, we did have one other volunteer, which was Kevin Erdman, mm-hmm. who is an attorney with the intellectual property constituency, represents some domainers and other clients with large domain holdings he mentioned to us. So with that, are you still interested in volunteering?
Sure. I don't want to in any way diss Kevin. I just,
no.
Given what we're dealing with here, I mean, it makes sense that a registrar rep is more thoroughly involved in this particular process.
Yeah, I'm happy to cede the
all by consensus. Excellent.
All right. Yeah, that's fine with me. Although certainly I'll give anybody else a chance to ask any questions of Paul. That they might have.
This is James, and I agree that we should have a registrar representative on this issue.
All right. I'm definitely fine with that, and Kevin is fine with that.
Yep.
The only other non-registrar on the call is Barbara. I imagine she's fine with that by her silence.
I concur that I think that Paul would be a good representative and chair.
All right. Great, Paul. All right, well, with that, what I was doing, Paul, was just trying to make sure that we all understood the three questions that were put before us.
Right.
If there's any sort of clarification we need to do, let's do it now. I've got we have a GNSO council call on Thursday morning, so we can certainly clarify anything that needs clarifying. That's where we were when you came back in, Paul.
Thank you. Okay.
Sounds like nobody has any issues with the three questions, so I think we should frankly start to discuss the first one today, if that's what people want to do. or we could put it off till next week. I should note for everybody that we don't yet, and we may not get representation from the ISP constituency or the non-commercial users. Asked them both a couple of times, and they have not appointed anybody. We do have one member from the ALAC, Sebastian, who volunteered, I guess, today or last night, so he'll probably be joining us starting next week.
Hi, this is James. Mike, just a quick question. I know it's on the wiki, but can we just briefly go over the timeline for the working group and some of the milestones and the schedule of deliverables?
Yeah, I was actually looking for some indication of that in our charter. We don't really have any sort of limits or timeline imposed upon us by the council, which is nice. I think that leaves it up to us to start our own process. We certainly, I suggest that we would keep the weekly calls, though, to get momentum. They're going to start out just 1 hour each, including this one, for several weeks. Talk about making them longer if the group wants to. But yeah, I mean, my read of the charter is that we don't have any sort of target. So I would suggest, I mean, Paul, feel free to suggest, anybody feel free to suggest, but perhaps we could work up a 120-day schedule or something like that of this done. Maybe even 90 days. My initial read of the three questions is that they may not be all that controversial. Others might that might turn out to be false, but... What do people think about 90 days or 120 days as an outside timeline for this?
And this is Paul, Mike. I would think that a goal would be to at least have a substantial amount of the work, if not everything, ready by Cairo. But whatever that timeline puts us, I guess it's more like a 90-day time frame. You know, that if we're not prepared to present the final report, at least a substantial update on the progress of the working group. It seems like a logical kind of target goal.
It certainly does. Working back from that, we would really have to have a draft final report by around early to mid-October, really early October, in order for council to be able to address it. We'd have to have the materials ready for council at least 10 days.
Mm-hmm. And even if that's not achievable, that we've,
I think
addressed most of the work, that would be
a
minimal goal.
I think maybe for 60 days to get our draft final report done. If it doesn't work out, then it doesn't work out.
It doesn't work out. Yeah. It's the advantage of not having a formal deadline yet. Glenn, just a question for you procedure-wise. At the very beginning, did you say that there's a follow-on call at the top of the hour after this one?
Yes.
Okay, how long?
Just for the next couple of weeks.
Couple of weeks, okay. So we're sort of, if we use this time slot, we'll be banded. It would be a 1 hour maximum call because of the other commitment responsibilities.
Yes, and then in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, you'll be able to have a 2 hour call if you want.
I think an hour a week might be plenty for this.
Okay.
Mike and all, if this is all off. If I just could remind of something that sort of puts a bit of a strain on any timeline we put there, and that is we need first of all to call for constituency statements on this, and we need to give them sufficient time to provide that. So, I mean, that's standard old procedure for PDPs. And I guess one of the tasks that we should try to address pretty immediately is to produce some kind of template, much in the same way as it was done for the fast flux, for constituency statements.
That does make sense. I think we should probably talk about the three questions amongst ourselves first and then try to put that template together. And how long do we need? At least 30 days for constituency statements, right?
Yes, at least. at least, and that they tend to slip.
All right. Well, I mean, Paul, you are really the chair now, so I would hand over the reins to you to even run the rest of this meeting if you're willing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd suggest that maybe we should talk through sort of the at least maybe the first question. Maybe we can get through all three of them. Just kind of get our brief thoughts out there, where we're at. And
sure. And just to follow up with Olaf's point, an excellent point, Olaf, and have to start thinking in terms of the fleshing out that timeline so folks can understand. As far as coming up with the templates, you or Glenn's staff will help us?
Yes, and to be... Well, actually, if I may break the news like this, that Marika will be your prime sort of staff support. And she has actually... we have looked a bit on a draft template, which perhaps, Marika, if you're on the call, you could, following this meeting, share with the group, either by email or on the wiki, just to have something to start from.
Yes, I'll definitely, maybe Paul, I can first share it with you, so if you want to tweak it, and then we can indeed post it to the group for further discussion. And as well, I can already input any comments that come up now in the discussion on this call.
That sounds excellent, Marika. I would just ask initially to use both email and the wiki, because I know a couple of registrar reps that couldn't be with us today, they may not remember to go to the wiki, but everybody will check their email initially.
Okay.
All right, so with that behind us, I think Mike makes a good point. Why don't we, if you all have the three questions in front of you, let's start at the top and... you know, have an initial discussion about the what's before us, if there are the questions about the questions that have been posed, scope issues, what might be involved in addressing them. We open the floor to anybody.
Paul, this is Jane. Oh, go ahead.
Kat, it is James, and who else is speaking? Both will recognize.
Go ahead, James. I'll defer. Right.
Well, just a question. Do we want to do an initial read-through, make sure we're comfortable with the language?
Sure, we could do that as well.
Or is that set in the charter, so therefore that's...
It's set in the charter, but if there's any issues that need clarifying, then I can take that back to council on Thursday morning.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
And then, Mike, what was your point, please? You were next.
I was just kind of just taking number one, you know, whether there could be a way for registrars to make registrar email address data available. I mean, that seems like, you know, generally, yes, there must be a way that
sure.
that could happen, obviously. It really seems to me the issue comes down to whether we want to require that registrar email be provided in the WHOIS, or whether there needs to be rules that, you know, the registrar, whether we need to reevaluate whether the registrant can overrule the admin contact. Those seem to be the two questions in part one.
Well, Olaf here, mind you, if we go into the WHOIS, well, we're actually dealing with something that's out of scope for this particular PDP. So the question is more, is there any other way that this could be achieved than to have it as a part of the mandatory WHOIS?
Yes,
okay, well, I want to just take issue with that. I mean, I'm not sure that, you know, this group could come back and say, we believe that the WHOIS should require that field. I don't see how that would step on the toes of anything else that's going on right now.
What exactly is going on right now in terms of WHOIS deliberations? What particular issues are they looking at the moment?
Hi, this is James. I'm on that group as well. We are currently defining testable hypotheses to submit to the council based on all of the research submission suggestions that were collected during the comments period. Expecting that to wrap up within the next 2 to 3 weeks, as Glenn mentioned. In other words, we certainly wouldn't want to couple any time-dependent items to progress on the on this issue.
Right.
My sense, and Olaf, please, you know, tell me if you feel real strongly about this, but my sense is that this group is equipped, and I mean, is specifically tasked with looking at this particular issue with who is, you know, and maybe we should just look at what the pluses and minuses would be of adding that field to the required record.
Right. I'm just concerned that we're moving into a particular field that's been subject of such controversy from other perspectives, and that is now advancing on along another track. So, I mean, deliberations, I guess that's pretty much okay. Whether we can sort of come out with an outcome that automatically would result in that kind of change of a policy starting from another policy area. Well, at the end of the day, that's the decision of the council. I'm just a bit concerned that we're starting to deal with an issue that is close to what has caused so much controversy during the years.
Well, I hear you, although I do think this is a very, very small piece of the huge GUI issue, right? I don't think this really brings in, you know, privacy. This doesn't necessarily, we don't need to have the privacy debate in this working group, right? That's for another group. But, and we should certainly look at what alternatives there are to, I mean, I guess isn't the essence of this question, and registrars, tell me if I've got this wrong, but the essence is trying to figure out ways to automate approval so that registrars have less hands-on contact in the process, correct?
Yeah, this is how I read it, Mike, and being sensitive to Olaf's suggestion that we also think about, are there any alternative structures that we might recommend putting in place? And thinking about what James said, my thinking personally, not as a chair, but as network solutions rep, is that I need to go back to my customer service, my engineering folks, and ping them about, you know, how would they like to see this done, so I can come back with thoughts and suggestions for the group. I'm thinking we may be better off kind of mulling this over the next week. And hopefully coming back to next week's call with some suggestions, and sensitive to the who is concerns and sensitivities, ideally come back with some things that might be outside of you know, just adding registrant email, say, to who is output records, because that is going to cause a stir. Ideally look for some sort of alternative solutions that could be implemented to speed up and ideally automate the process.
But this is Kevin, and I just wanted to bring up the thought that it seems to me from a user perspective, wanting to have reliable and maybe authentication is getting into the second topic, but at least having a reliable identification of the true owner of the domain name registration, and making sure that there is actual consent to the transfer is, you know, a huge concern for a domain owner, a registrant. And whether it's an email address or if it's something else, but it seems like there ought to be some mechanism that takes into account authentication and the reliability of the mechanism, not just the automation and speed of it.
An excellent point, Kevin, and one that Network Solutions certainly shares. We've very publicly and very consistently raised our concerns about the way the transfer policy is currently constructed, because we see the current policy exposing registrants to the sort of abuse you're referring to, absent any sort of affirmative approval of a transfer request. However, and Olaf or Marika, please help us out here. I think that particular perspective may be a bit beyond the scope of this particular working group. That is recommending some sort of affirmative consent to a transfer. I know that this has been a very sensitive, very, very delicate part of previous work that's been done to update the transfer policy. And I would definitely appreciate some staff guidance here on, what the view is, or Mike's guidance from a council perspective, what the view is on making any recommendations that would potentially require some form of affirmative consent to a transfer.
Olaf here. We should keep in mind that we have quite a swath of proposed PDPs coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And what one of the criteria for this little priority setting group, trying to bunch them up together, was to try to try for whatever low hanging fruit there may be, things that are comparatively simple to change while keeping, and of course some of them which are the most, another slightly contrasting objective was of course to solve the most the important issues early on. I think this is, I have to check again whether in the other PDPs foreseen this is not covered really, what you're mentioning here, to have affirmative consent. But let's keep it on hold for right now. But if that's the view of the working group and it's not covered in the other PDPs, well, that may be an interesting outcome. Whether it will fly is another thing, of course.
Yeah. I mean, it seems to me that it could be one of the options we might lay out in response to number two.
And thank you, Mike. you beat me to it. It certainly seems that it could tie in as an option. I just, again, Olaf, would appreciate if you could look at that or speak to any of your colleagues.
I do some reading. I can't recall them all by heart.
I used to have that cheat sheet, which was very helpful, but even then, have to go back and review because it's a detail.
No, but I'll get back to the list on that.
All right.
Question for Olaf and the group. This is James.
Please, James.
Olaf, you mentioned that there were additional forthcoming PDPs in this area. Are they interdependent? So, for example...
I think that all depends. I mean, if you start chewing on something, you quite quickly come into some degree of overlapping with others. And that's what we experienced during the very first PDP on trying to clarify some of the provisions already in there today. And we found that, where we perhaps wanted to go was a bit going a bit too far in two cases, notably into one of these is that we'll cover under PDPC. And the general feeling from that exercise was that it would rather be handled in PDPC. So a certain degree of overlap there will always be. I mean, many of the issues are interrelated. I mean, if you solve one, maybe another one goes away automatically. since we're dealing with the same policy, basically.
Okay, thank you.
And just a follow-on for Olaf and or Mike, from council's perspective, they were going to take, the council was going to authorize the PDPs in alphabetical order, so we go through A, B, C, et cetera, or was there a willingness to perhaps jump around if there was progress, say, in this working group and some of the things we were coming up with naturally tied with issues and say, C, could we have, you know, a PDP group for C immediately follow on or even overlap with this group's work so that, again, those issues that could be mutually resolved or done so? Was there any thinking on how that will play out?
Well, the thinking, first of all, was that, well, it would be great if we could run things in parallel, but realizing that there would be limitations in the necessary participation,
right.
It was, the assumption was made that they would probably be handled sequentially. And it was not specifically said that, all right, A, B, C, D, and E in that particular order, but let's take that as the first assumption. I think that's perfectly possible to modify if there are good reasons for it.
Yeah, that's about what I was going to say, too. I think there certainly is some flexibility to move things around and bring other issues in to do ongoing working groups, to have working groups overlap. Just the real concern was there so many issues within this IRTP right now. I think whatever, there's a dozen or more issues that were identified to be addressed.
19, to be precise.
19. So, you know, just given manpower limitations for these working groups, felt that they need to be broken up and then laid out essentially sequentially. There was a thought that they would overlap if that made sense, if there was enough people to work.
Okay, well, you know, my view then, wearing the chair's hat, is, you know, why don't we, this working group, we're first in line, let's address the issues to the best of our ability and not necessarily overreach a mandate, but not necessarily feel hamstrung or constrained if there are issues that we feel could and should be addressed, and the three particular questions that have been put before us, let's do our best to address them. If we as a group determine that, you know, or make a recommendation that they'd be better handled by one of the other groups, okay, but we may be helping our colleagues and potentially helping ourselves if we participate later in trying to address them now as the first ones taking a whack at this particular process.
Thank you, Paul. That's exactly what I was looking for, were some boundaries
mm-hmm.
on where our discussions can and can't go. So.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to put boundaries on working groups. I mean, you know, obviously we want to stay focused on these three questions, but to the extent there's ancillary issues that we can lay out for either to be tabled for future discussion or if we think it makes sense to talk about them a little bit with this group, we should go ahead and do that while we're convened.
Agreed. All right, then. Well, in some ways, we've already touched on number two on our list with the previous discussion. Just to, you know, try and cover the three today, looking at number three, policy provisions for partial bulk transfers.
Can we stick on number two for just a moment there?
Sure, Mike.
Just a factual starting point, could you or anybody else on the registrar side give us an idea? I mean, some registrars, as I understand it, have some sorts of authentication processes that they offer, correct?
I'm pretty sure that's correct, but I would like to confirm that with my customer service colleagues.
Yeah, I think that's something we should try to get out on the table, you know, pretty quickly, is what are the options that are in the marketplace now that some have.
And this is James. I'll have to check on that as well. We have some methods in place, and I know that we're working on some additional developments in that area. So.
I know there's one that's not electronic authentication. I just know one from my experience at Yahoo that Mark Monitor has. It's called their Super MVD domain, and they would have to call me on my cell phone number, and I'd have to give a secret passphrase, that sort of thing. Not necessarily electronic authentication, but still is one potential option, I guess, at the really high-end security.
There's all of another aspect that perhaps deserves some consideration is that, in recent years, almost all have this EPP, Extensible Provisioning Protocol, with the auth info code. Now, has that changed any of the, let's call it, severity of this particular issue? Has it eased off the pressure for it?
Olaf, this is Barbara. Also, I would say that the auth info and EPP obviously has been fairly broadly rolled out, and I would have to confirm with the other members of the registry's constituency just to see if there's anybody who hasn't rolled that out yet. But that may very well be a good solution.
Yeah, it's an open question from me, but we noticed that in the issues report. So.
The other area I think we should probably get on the table factually on this number two is, what have been the security concerns or issues that have arisen? I mean, I know of a couple, fairly recent, well-publicized hacks on registrar accounts, but, actually laying out the facts for the group to consider would be useful.
Agreed.
And I don't know if any of the registrar folks have information on that, or whether we should go maybe to APWG, which I can do, ask them for some thoughts on it.
I think both are probably a good idea, Mike. To have the third party APWG, and then to whatever degree we can, registrar reps can bring their examples to the table, we should all do that.
I think, earlier rather than later, let's get the facts on the table before we start discussing them.
Absolutely. Making some notes. Others? Others have anything on two? Okay, how about our third question here about the partial bulk transfer?
I think, first of all, Olaf here, since bulk transfer, as it's now seen, it's a register operation in a certain sense. So, basically, what's happening when a registrar folds or something, that there is a bulk transfer and there are provisions for that. But the question is whether to cover partial bulk transfers between registrars, registrar initiated. I think that's pretty clear that that's covered. Is it also clear that it covers the registrant initiated bulk transfers of numerous domains from one registrar to another? I leave this as a bit of an open question, since that's the interpretation I gave it in the issues report. But that's in the wide sense. Is it too wide?
So are you saying, Olaf, that there is a provision for partial bulk transfers already?
No, for complete bulk transfer.
Okay.
For example, when a registrar is de-accredited.
Right, I understand that. But then you mentioned there was a difference between whether the transfers were initiated by the registrant or by the registrar.
You could see sort of a business deal between two registrars. One taking over, for example, all registrations under info from the other, That would be a partial bulk transfer. Another way to look upon it would be as the registrant initiated. Registrant having, for example, acquired a company with a lot of domain names, and they want to consolidate all of them to one registrar.
Right.
So they would like to move it from the registrar that the acquired company used to their own registrar. That would be another partial bulk transfer, if you like.
Right, and today you've got to basically put them in one by one at the registrar level?
Yes, yes. Formally, that's the way it has to happen.
This is Barbara. Also, another use case may be in the case where a registrar has a reseller that has become accredited and may want to transfer the domain name to either their own accreditation, or they may very well become affiliated with another registrar and want to transfer the domain name to that registrar using a partial block and bulk transfer.
Right.
Good point.
I suspect, and you know, Kevin, I'm pretty sure I speak for you on this, but I suspect that everyone on this call has agreed that there should be some sort of partial bulk transfer policy, and we should spend some time figuring out what that should be, right?
Yep.
Seems just very inefficient today, when obviously there's a lot of parties that have thousands of domain names and should have flexibility to move them when they want to.
I agree, Mike. This is James. I would like to get some more information on this from our team internally, because I believe we have some market-oriented products and solutions in this area that may or may not preclude the need for a policy. But I understand if our objective is to coordinate amongst all registrars, then a policy might be the only way to do that.
I believe that's our objective here, is to really take parts of the transfer policy that have been ambiguous or lacking in some way, try to fix them across all of the registrars.
Yeah, agreed. Fix and focus is certainly the goal in the entire process. All right. Other thoughts on this one today?
Well, this is Kevin again. I think another point that should be addressed in making a policy about partial bulk transfers is whether that policy itself should be a minimum criteria policy, or whether it should be a uniform, that is, setting a standard that all registers have to follow. Because I think one of the difficulties in larger transactions involving a lot of domain names is that different registrars will have their own different internal procedures, making it very difficult to an acquirer of several domains that may be in multiple registrars to be able to relocate them at a preferred place and to manage that whole process. And I would advocate making such a policy, not just a minimum threshold, but a uniform procedure that all registrars would follow, so that there's complete transparency once you figured out the details that you need to provide to get the transfer done, then it just you don't have to then figure out what extra little thing you have to do for Registrar A or Registrar B.
Agreed, Kevin, although Olaf and Marika, my understanding is, since this is a PDP working group, policy development process working group, the outcome of our efforts will be ultimately considered consensus policy. Therefore, they're binding on registries and registrars, correct?
Yes, indeed. If it goes all the way and adopted by the council and subsequently by the board, well, it changes the the IRTP accordingly.
So then your concerns are addressed, Kevin, because this would become universally binding on the contracted parties.
Well, the
depends
point
a little on how we phrase it, of course, the modifications in the policy. If we add a piece on partial bulk transfers, well, it can be worded loosely or very tightly. So that's...
And I think that's the point that I'm making is to have a policy that just doesn't contain, well, here's the minimum that needs to be done for a bulk transfer, but to outline the whole procedure so that if you comply with the protocol or whatever you want to call it, the end result of this policy, if you comply with that, then all the registrars will complete the transfer based on fulfilling those requirements.
Okay.
I don't know what the correct terminology for that is, but that's the objective I would hope to be able to...
I think you're basically talking about, writing a new section into the IRTP to address bulk transfers, and then the IRTP is binding on all registrars and registries.
This is James. Can I get in the queue?
Yeah.
Please, James. Go ahead.
I'd just like to reemphasize a thought, which is that this is, in my reading, this is somewhat of a convenience issue. It's not saying that bulk transfer can't be done manually. I just want us to be careful that we're recommending policy for something that could conceivably seen as an area of competitive differentiation between registrars. If they can provide a service that more conveniently and easily handles bulk transfers at the initiation of or at the request of a registrant, then that could be a marketable service to the type of registrant who could make use of that. And certainly that wouldn't be, the entire universe of registrants. There's just a few large portfolio holders that that would see that. So I just would just put out on the table that maybe this is something we shouldn't automatically assume needs to be in a policy.
That's a fair point, James.
Mike, yeah, but I definitely agree with that, James. I think we should do some factual outreach, especially to my constituency and the IPC and to the registrant's constituencies, and see if this is a pain point for people. And I certainly personally have been involved in a few bulk transfers, and while I guess it takes a little bit of time to enter them all one by one, that's the registrar ultimately that's doing that. It's not me, so it hasn't been a huge problem from my perspective, but. I don't know, it apparently got raised as an issue for us to consider, so there must be some pain somewhere.
Right, and I think that the pain is there, and we can probably substantiate that with some further data, but my question is the purpose to solve that through policy or allow all of the rainbow of registrar business models to address that? Because I believe they're out there now to some degree or another.
This is Barbara. I'd like to enter the queue.
Sure. Please go ahead, Barbara.
I guess from a logistics standpoint, to the extent that you're initiating transfers, aside from what is now, I guess, in the policy of bulk transfer where ICANN authorizes the registry to transfer all of the domains in one registrar account to another registrar account, would it not be necessary outside of that to, in essence, obtain a form of authorization from each registrant to, prior to effecting what it sounds like you all are calling a bulk transfer, which is initiated at the registrar level?
Barbara, I was counting that as a separate scenario because that would be initiated between two registrars or at the request of ICANN in the case of registrar failure. I read this particular question to be registrant driven, but if I'm mistaken in that, then
I can just
draw the concern.
As a registry, we have received requests from registrars as well, coming to us asking us to transfer a partial portfolio of names, if you will, from one registrar to another. And in most cases, it is due to perhaps a reseller becoming accredited. So, you know, in that particular case, I would think that you would not want to have to go through the process of obtaining the forms of authorization from each individual registrant in order to be able to do that. So I guess I'm just a little bit confused, and I personally would think that there would be a need for this particular type of service or capability.
In that scenario, I completely agree that we would need a policy to handle that that operation.
Okay, if I can jump in, folks, because I'm looking at the time and I realize some of you have another commitment at the top of the hour. I want to be a very accommodating open chair, so I will put it to the group on the call. We've gone through all three of the major questions in front of us, and by my own notes I realize we all have quite a bit of conferring with colleagues and extra research and homework to do. What is the group's feeling in terms of how we would like to address the issues moving forward? Should we take them in the order currently provided? Does the group see either numbers 2 or 3 as perhaps easier to address or perhaps of greater concern to their interests, therefore they won't want to put them at the beginning of the queue? Looking ahead to next week's call, we would ideally like to dive into this and really start getting into the details of the issue. Where do folks stand? Where would they, you know, how should we proceed? Will we start with number one and work through the list, or what do you all want to do?
Mike?
Paul, this is Olaf. While you're all considering that, I could just get back to a question earlier on, whether any of the other PDPs cover whether there should be affirmative consent by the registrant. And there is none of them that explicitly mention it. nor is there any that is closer to this one, or issue one in our set to that particular issue, as far as I can see. So we're not entering, perhaps we enter uncharted territory, but we don't encroach upon any other PDP as far as I can see.
Okay.
So, Paul, just a suggestion maybe,
mm-hmm.
For the group. Maybe we should go back and look at all three questions preliminarily at the same time, just to try to start the ball rolling to understand what is out there in the market now and what is really the harm that's going on. Try to get those sort of fundamental elements on the table and then take them one by one.
I'm fine with that as well. Others concur?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Then, Mike makes a great suggestion. Let's follow that at our next call. You know, our homework for the week is to work with our colleagues, identify trouble areas and potentially solutions as well. And we can have a more general conversation next week and then lead into more specific focusing on the various issues thereafter.
Thanks, Paul, for volunteering.
Okay. And again, for a point of clarification, Marika, you are our staff point of contact.
So yes.
We'll work with you to communicate again, both via the wiki and email, to all those who have expressed interest. Basically what we did today and where we intend to go moving forward. That's the plan?
Perfect.
Very good. Okay. Well, I'll be in touch with you to assist with that. And for everyone else, thank you for your time. We're right at the top of the hour, so we'll finish this up. And we're scheduled to meet again the same time, same day next week. I'll talk to you all then.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mike.
Very much.
Very good, guys.